to cut you off. And thank you. I'm very grateful for the invitation because I'm talking here about a new idea in a field that I'm deeply interested in and have written a few papers in from time to time, but which is not my field. And so I'm very grateful for the opportunity to present this to the Quantum Foundation's audience. Come on in. Here, which is a bit intimidating. You may not realize it, but you guys are intimidating when one. Yeah. And on top of that, I seem to have caught the cold or the flu that people have, so I'm a bit under the weather and functioning at about half speed. So I'll do my best. For many years, really since my undergraduate, I was working on a set of ideas about quantum foundations based on the idea that one should try to make a hidden variable theory, the idea that quantum mechanics is an incomplete theory and one should try to make a hidden variable theory. And I took a particular route to that, that, and I hope none of you have the bad luck or bad job, that about 5 or 6 years ago, I understood after a long time that what I was trying to do was unlikely to work, and which doesn't mean that all of a sudden I become convinced that quantum mechanics makes sense, but I felt the real desperation of not knowing how to make sense of quantum mechanics in the sense of somebody wanting an old-fashioned realist account of what's going on in an experiment in physics, not a new-fashioned realist account that you were just hearing about from Cecilia. And so about 6 months ago, I sat myself down and said, darn, I shouldn't possibly have a new idea. And I asked myself a question, which I'll expose to you, and an answer suggests itself, and that is the essence of this idea. This idea is very simple. It's a little bit... There's some technicalities in working it out, and I've organized the talk in such a way as to suppress the technicality. But the idea itself is very simple, and what I'll do is, let me go to the... By the way, thanks for... Not many people said the idea was right, but none of them were able to find something convincingly wrong with it to prevent my talking. So what I'm going to do is talk a somewhat... extended remarks about the motivation, because if nothing else, I want to convey where point of view, where these ideas come from. Then I have a framework or a new formulation of quantum theory called the real ensemble framework. It also has a name I'll expose. Between me and myself is called the white squirrel formulation for reasons that will become clear by the end of the talk. Or if they're not, that's your problem. So I'll expose the framework, sketch how the Schrodinger quantum mechanics is recovered by putting conditions on the framework. Then there's a particular issue that arises, which will become clear when I come to it, called the issue of phase alignment. And it's necessary to really complete the theory, to have a model for that, but that'll become clear when I come to it. Then any new idea, there's a standard saying in the history and philosophy of science that any new idea is clearly wrong. That is, anybody can come up with objections to kill any new idea in physics. And so there's a set of issues that occurred to me, others that people raised, and I'm going to go through the issues given as much time as I have, what are the most serious issues, and in some of them I think there is an answer, and others of them I give a sketch of an approach for an answer. So let me start with some general aspirations, because I see the problem of making sense of quantum mechanics as one component of the problem of making a new framework for physical theory that incorporates space-time, cosmology, gravity, particle physics, etc., all within some version of quantum physics. And so my thinking starts with the idea of relationalism, and one place to start, that is the idea that the physical properties, the degrees of freedom of systems in nature, are about relations between objects or subsystems. And one place to start is Leibniz's two great principles, the principle of sufficient reason, that there must be a rational answer to every question that can be imposed of the form, why is the universe like this and not otherwise, and the second principle of Leibniz, I'll name in a minute. And this immediately gives oneself a framework in which there are no fundamental symmetries, because a symmetry means there's no answer to that question. Space and time are, as Leibniz argued, aspects of relations. Even more strongly, perhaps space is emergent from a network of relations, and that is a very common thought in the quantum gravity world, whether you're working from whatever framework you're working in. And I take that as a likely starting point. If space is emergent, then so is locality, and so it's not surprising to think of the quantum mechanical non-locality as something which is a fossil of a previous, more fundamental description before space and locality emerges. And it's perhaps indeed entanglement is a clue to the real nature of the world before space. Another way to channel this principle is the principle of explanatory closure, that everything that causally influences.
Yes. Is it significant that you said space and not space?
Yes, it is significant. But I won't.
Okay.
That's another talk. That everything that causally influences the behavior of a physical system within the universe must be another physical system within the universe. And that means that I'm not persuaded when people start talking about quantum physics and language like potentiality influences actuality, or possibility becomes real, or things like that. For me, if there's a degree of freedom, it has a dynamics, it's influenced by something, that's something else that better also be a physical degree of freedom within the universe.
Lee, what notion of locality do you have in mind when you say if space is emergent and so is locality?
The standard relativistic locality.
So no
same lessons. Yeah. A related idea, and I'm going to use these ideas to motivate my little idea about quantum mechanics, the principle of reciprocity, that if something causally influences the behavior of something else, there's a reciprocal action. There's no action without reciprocal reaction. Okay. So this is, again, this is the kind of things that I just want to set out as a framework. I'm going to get quite detailed in a minute. Related to that is Leibniz's principle of the identity of the indiscernible, that if two objects are indistinguishable in some sense, they're the same object. If two subsystems are indistinguishable in some sense, they're the same system. And I went off on a kind of riff about that related to quantum mechanics, because we're used to saying, consider two hydrogen atoms at different parts of the universe, one here, one in another galaxy. We're used to treating them as identical systems, and indeed in quantum many-body system, we would say if they were in a spin-even state, an energy spin state, see them as part of, as exchangeable under bosonic statistics. But what can we take that really seriously? Is there a sense in which in the quantum world, two subsystems far away from each other, if you remove the distinguishing feature of being in different places, are in some sense the same system, or can be easily confused with each other? And that's, again, I have a much more precise statement, but that's the direction of the thinking went.
Okay, now, so that's, you can relax at the end of the philosophical baggage. Now, aspirations about quantum theory. So what do I think the aspirations for quantum foundation should be? First, to solve the measurement problem. Not everybody thinks the measurement problem is a problem. If you're not interested in the solution to the measurement problem, then I won't mind if you're, you know, do something else right now. I'm interested in solving the measurement problem. And one way to solve the measurement problem is with a theory of vehicles, a theory that asserts X is observed because X is really part of the reality of the world. X is really true. Okay. Now, we have a proof of concept in de Broglie-Bohm theory that we can have a theory of vehicles, but in a minute I'll be criticizing de Broglie-Bohm theories having awkward features that I'd like to try to get around. One of them is de Broglie-Bohm theory has the idea that the vehicles are coordinates in space or a configuration space. And this, of course, I have nothing to say against de Broglie-Bohm theory, but one can, and people have, and I'm somewhat persuaded by it, make a contrary argument that there is a symmetry in quantum mechanics under transformation of bases that can mix up position bases with other bases, and that's too fundamental a feature to be accidental. So can one have a theory of vehicles which doesn't prefer a position basis? Okay. And I don't know how many people know, there was a paper of Vink that did something like de Broglie-Bohm in an arbitrary basis, and that was very influential for my thinking. It's not, I didn't know of it before embarking on this, so I think it's interesting to tell me about it. Here's another aspiration for a theory of vehicles. Eliminate the double ontology of de Broglie-Bohm theory. The most awkward thing about de Broglie-Bohm theory is that you have to believe that the vehicles are the positions of the particle and the wave function of the particle. And that's awkward for two reasons. One of them is it's extravagant. It's vastly increasing reality. Second, it's a bit too science fiction-y. One has to believe in all these parts of wave functions that continue on forever and ever, ever, even though the particle goes some different direction. Third, it conflicts with this principle of reciprocity because the wave function influences where the particle vehicle goes, but the particle vehicle does not influence, the position vehicle does not influence the wave function. Okay. So it would be better to try to keep the wave function as what some people like Einstein and Schrodinger first tried to interpret it as a property of an ensemble, and to not have the wave function be a vehicle. Can you do that? And I'm going to have a proposal for how one does that. Then finally, and this frames everything I do, I don't believe in quantum cosmology. I think that quantum mechanics is an approximation to some cosmological theory which is quite different, where that approximation is good for subsystems of the universe. So I'm not trying to construe quantum mechanics as a fundamental theory. I'm trying to construe quantum mechanics as an approximate description to some unknown theory for subsystems, for small subsystems of the universe. And we'll see that that's the way in which I frame the proposal I made. So let me concentrate on eliminating the double ontology. People who play with de Broglie-Bohm and similar theories, hydrodynamic theories, like to express the wave function as the square root of a probability distribution in e to the I times a phase. Now, the probability distribution certainly looks like a property of an ensemble, and I'm going to claim that it is. But what to do about the phase? The phase is not so easy to read as a property of the ensemble. And what I'm going to be doing is taking the phase and breaking it up and basically saying there is a vehicle, and I'll work, even though I've criticized it, I'll work in the position basis just as an example, although I'm not tied to it. But in the position basis, there will be a vehicle which is the position of a particle. And then there's going to be an ensemble of particles with different positions. And for every member of that ensemble is going to carry a second beable, which is a little phase. And it's not a wave function, it's not a phase function, it's just a little e to the I phi. So my ensembles are going to be ensembles in which every member has two beables, something analogous to position, or more generally, an eigenvalue of a Hermitian operator. And the second one is going to be a phase. And the idea is going to be that if you know, if you have enough densely populated your space of position beables, then you're going to be able, and so for every x, you have a beable, you have a system at that x, and it has a little phase, you can reconstruct from that information a function s of x. And if you'll, I'll show you explicitly how that happens.
So what, I think you mentioned this, what is beable?
Beable is an assertion, this really exists. It's not an observable in quantum mechanics, it's something that is asserted to really exist.
It's a physical object.
A property of an object.
But what about the change of basis? If x exists, then it exists on the basis, but then in another basis, it's...
That's in the list of issues that come later. So everything I'm doing could be done in any basis, but I have to make a commitment to a basis for a given subsystem.
So when you commit to a basis, you commit to a choice of beable.
Yes.
You change where.
Yes.
Where is
So I have to choose a basis, have beables for a given subsystem. They could be different for different subsystems. I'm not committed to a position basis, although I'll use it as the common example. Okay. Now, here's the idea, and I think I've been talking philosophy enough, so I'm going to just state the idea, skip a bunch of slides, and then go to the realization of it. Consider a hydrogen atom sitting there at the tip of my finger, or sitting in, you have an apparatus there under your hat, and in the apparatus you have an ion trap, and there is a given, I know I'm misusing it, but there's a given ion in that ion trap, in a particular quantum state. Okay. I'm asserting that it has beables and that there's also an ensemble of states, of systems which are relevant. But I like my ensembles to be real. I don't want to have, as in de Broglie-Bohm, an ensemble which is just some statistical ensemble in our minds. I want to have a real ensemble. So where is the ensemble? And the idea is that for an atom, like the hydrogen atom in a particular state, there are actually lots and lots and lots of hydrogen atoms in the universe. So let's make them the ensemble. That's the basic idea. Can we make the ensemble similar or other atoms, other molecules in the universe, which we would call being in the same quantum state? And can we make that a real physical ensemble? Okay. Now, if you read the Schrodinger equation, this is what's peculiar about de Broglie-Bohm, has the evolution of the beable, the position beable, evolving as a consequence of the wave function, which is a property of the ensemble. I want to assert the ensemble is a real physical ensemble, scattered, its elements are scattered through the universe. Okay. So what I ask is, can I posit a new kind of interaction between the elements of the ensemble, which takes place just because they're in the same ensemble. This is a new, very weird, very non-local kind of physical interaction, such that that interaction, in the limit that the ensembles are large, when the approximation of the ensembles are large, approximates or recovers the influence of the wave function on the individual beable in de Broglie-Bohm. That's the question. Okay. One idea comes from that, which is part of the mystery of the measurement problem is why are macroscopic systems different than microscopic systems? Why do microscopic systems have indefinite values, you can't predict what value of the beable you have when you look under your hat, whereas macroscopic systems you can. And here there's an opportunity to have a new kind of answer to that, which is, well, macroscopic systems are systems which are big and complex enough that there are no other elements in the ensemble. That is, they're ensembles of one. So therefore, dynamics involving interaction amongst members of an ensemble doesn't function. And therefore, if that dynamics involving interaction amongst members of an ensemble of atoms accounts for the stochastic nature of quantum dynamics, then, as well as the superposition principle and so forth, then those aspects will not apply to macroscopic systems. Again, it's an idea. Let's see if we can make it work.
So how do you decide what's in the ensemble and what's not? I mean, if I want to look at the electron in a hydrogen atom, is the ensemble associated with that electron all the other electrons in the universe, or just the ones bound to hydrogen, or what?
That's an excellent question, and it comes up again in my list of questions, and I'm able to partly answer it. For now,
so postpone that question.
For now, postpone that question, and trade it for any time you would assert that to some reasonable approximation, there are a bunch of subsystems of the universe in the same quantum state. However precise you require that to be with quantum mechanical calculations, I'm happy with that.
They all have to be in the same quantum state?
Yes, to be the ensemble.
To be the ensemble. So hydrogen atoms in the ground state are one ensemble, hydrogen atoms in the
2P. One in the 2S state or 2P are different ensembles.
Yes. Again, this is why I need a preferred
case. And is a hydrogen atom in a box different than the ones not in a box?
Yes.
Okay.
If I heard you correctly, you said you want to explain why it's possible to predict the value of the interval for a macroscopic system but not for a microscopic system.
Yes.
But it seems like you can't predict the value of a interval for a macroscopic system any more than you can for a microscopic system. In fact, typically you can predict it less well.
Again, I have something to say about that. We'll come to that. It's a sketch of an argument about that.
Consider the relation of one system relative to other system, then there is only one system which has that, I mean, like a hydrogen atom in box. Now, if you consider other systems...
No. This is very important that I consider all these quantum mechanical descriptions to be approximations. So you name your approximation, and to the extent that defines what you would call a quantum state as you would use it in your predictions of laboratory experiments, and I will use that one. And then I'll come back later and try to make a more sophisticated answer. Okay. So now that's the blah, blah, blah. Now here's the precise framework. It has a kinematical part and a dynamical part. The kinematical part is here. Quantum mechanics describes a small subsystem. That small subsystem has pairs of vehicles. For every subsystem, there's an eigenvalue of some operator, Hermitian operator, which can evolve stochastically in time. I'm going to take the approximation which these are discrete. And there's a phase. The Bs are the possible outcomes of some complete measurement. And there's a phase. These are members of ensembles of similarly blah, blah, blah systems. Okay. The total viable of the ensemble is the collection of the eigenvalues, in particular of the particular members and the phases. And then there's some ensemble variables. For example, NB tells me how many systems in the ensemble have the variable B. I make an auxiliary hypothesis, which I have a model to explain dynamically, but for the moment it will be an auxiliary hypothesis, that the phase of the I-th system actually just depends on the I system's vehicle. This is what I call phase alignment. And I'm going to posit it initially, and then I have a proposal for dynamics which achieves it. Okay. Hence, the ensemble has a probability density rho for every, that's the occupation number over the total size of the ensemble, and a phase phi of B. That's the kinematics. The dynamics. I need to introduce a new kind of interaction amongst the members of this ensemble. And here it goes. I propose that there is a stochastic process where the variables of any such system in the ensemble can copy the variables of another system in the ensemble. So the dynamics is by choosing stochastically or randomly another element of the ensemble. They're in, quote, the same quantum state, but they have different values of the vehicles, and they copy the vehicles, irrespective of space, of where they are in the universe. So I hypothesize that there is a probability per unit time that the system I copies the vehicles of the system J, which is a function of the occupation numbers and the phases. And when this happens, the vehicle of system I becomes the vehicle of the system J, and the phase of the system I becomes the phase of the system J. Okay.
Which one is getting updated?
I is getting updated by J.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a symmetrical, they don't exchange, because then nothing would happen if they exchanged. That is, the occupation numbers couldn't evolve if they just exchanged, so it's copied. I also posit that there is a rule by which the phase of the I system changes in time, which is a sum over all the other systems in the ensemble, and some functional dependence on the occupation numbers. Ni is the systems in the same vehicle state as the system I. Phi I are the phases of I, and so forth. Okay. I assume there is some formula by which the phases are constantly changing. Okay, so that's the summary of the dynamics. And I have these two dependencies, and here it's a sum over the other systems in the ensemble. So it's pairwise. It reaches out to each one of the other systems in the ensemble and gives an update to the phase. And similarly, the copying rule is it copies one other at a time. And now the question is, can I choose these functions or rates, f and g, so as to derive the dynamics of the Schrodinger equation? And the answer is yes, and that's the rules that do it. Now, I have many slides prepared to derive, to show how this is arrived at. But let me just point out the probability per unit time that I copy J depends on the number of systems in the same state, vehicle state as I, and J depends on some coefficients that depends on the vehicles, the R's and the deltas, which actually, when we reconstruct quantum dynamics, become the information you need to construct the Hamiltonian.
So what are the sine plus and R's?
R's are coefficients that come from basically real parts of matrix elements in the Hamiltonian. Sine plus means the sine truncated to its positive part, so it goes through.
What's AI, AJ?
A is the vehicle, the value of the vehicle, the eigenvalue of the I system.
Okay, so delta AB should be delta AI, AJ?
Yes, sorry. It should be here. And phi I and phi j are the phases. Okay. And it shouldn't mention E and D are error terms, which I have dropped from the slide. So forget this here. Okay. Now, notice that these make sense for a general assignment of phases to the members of the ensemble, but there's a fixed point where the phis just depend on the A's, and that's preserved under the evolution. And again, later on, there's a different dynamics which forces the phases to align. Okay. So this is highly non-local. And the rate that one system copies another, that one subsystem copies another, knows about how many similar copies there are of each of them. So it's very highly non-local. Okay, but this is what's necessary to get quantum dynamics. Okay, now, I think given that I've already used a fair amount of time, I'm going to skip to...
So if all the phases are the same, phi equal phi j, then the system does not evolve anymore.
Yes. That means you have an that means you're in an eigenstate of energy. And the probability distributions don't evolve anymore. Um, there's now a lot of details.
My energy.
And let me just jump to here. So these are with the rows replacing the ends. Row A is the occupation number of the ith level over the number of guys in the ensemble. These are the same rules I wrote before. This, sorry, should say row A, not. This is a translation of the same rules that I wrote before, expressed in terms of the row dot rather than the rate of change, rather than the rates for the copy rules. So this is just a re-expression of what we had before.
So rates are the minus 1/2?
Ignore that. That's some guess, that's some argument to refine an ansatz that is on the previous slide. I just skipped 10 slides.
So is the sine, so it'd be sine plus?
No. Because this is the rho dot, and that has, rho dot can increase or decrease. The copy thing can only go one way, but the rho dot has a term which is copying in and a term which is copying out.
So how do you get the copy thing?
From the copy thing, you get this. Maybe if there are enough questions about that, I can go back. You have to work out rho dot is the sum over all the possible eigenvalues of the probability to be an eigenvalue B, a transition function to go from B to A minus the probability to be an eigenvalue A, and a transition function to go out from A to B. And these transition functions are related to the function F that I wrote before.
So rho is the probability or is the actual number, the factual number of...
Only somebody in quantum foundation could ask that question. It is the fractional number.
Okay.
Yeah. Because the assumption is that the ensemble is real, okay, and I forgot to say it, sorry, well enough mixed that the ensemble occupation number, occupation ratios are the same as relative frequency probabilities, which are the same as the probability if I have one system. In other words, the idea is this copying goes fast enough and has gone on for long enough that the probabilities in the ensemble are the probabilities if I open, if I lift up the hat, that I see the particular vehicle. Okay. What I did is I did a series of ansatz. I required that the system, that the rules not know how large the ensembles are, that it be impossible, as long as the occupation numbers are simply large, not to measure from quantum dynamics how large the ensembles are. I imposed that. I imposed time reversal invariance. And I made an ansatz that respected both of those, and I found that the simplest form of the ansatz recovered the Schrodinger equation. But I think because I want to discuss the why should you take this seriously, what about this, what about this, what about this, I'll skip those technical things. They're in the paper, although I'm happy to go back. Okay?
So this is equivalent to Schrodinger equation, or only in the limit that you have a large number of...
Very good. It's equivalent to the Schrodinger equation in the limit that all, in the approximation where all the MAs are large. And I will come back and discuss that issue in a lot of detail. Okay. And here's the reconstruction. Psi is square root of rho e to the I phi, as usual, for a quantum state. And the r's and the deltas and the omegas, there are some omegas in here, populate. The omegas are just the diagonal parts of the matrices r's, and they populate the Hamiltonian matrix. And then these equations are the same as the Schrodinger equation.
So h bar is repeated?
H bar appears in scaling. Originally, there's no h bar, and h bar appears in scaling right here. And the delta what's the right way to say this? The phis are dimensionless, so the phi dots are raised, the omegas are dimensionless, so the rows are dimensionless, the row dots are raised, so there's no h bars in these forms of the equations, but to make the correspondence to the Schrodinger equation with the h bar here, I have to put h bars into the Hamiltonian.
And but there's no way to take the classical limit of your equation.
There is a way to take the classical limit. Again, something that I've worried about and I will come to.
Everything's entirely non-relativistic at this scale?
Absolutely. I'm only claiming to do the non-relativistic. And I'm not addressing, there's a this copy rule assumes a simultaneity. Okay? And I have not investigated.
It has to be changed if you want relativity.
Yeah, or I can jump up and down about shape dynamics and use the Raman CMC exfoliation.
There's no space left. There's what? No space yet. Your arms are
short. Right. So I'm a long way from really addressing that question.
But the Schrodinger equation, I mean, in quantum field theory, you also use Schrodinger equation.
Right, but this is not a Schrodinger equation for quantum field theory. I'm not pretending it is. It's a Schrodinger equation for some atom or some molecule in the non-relativistic approximation, one step at a time. Okay. So there are the evolution rules again. And now I have basically a series of comments on issues to be raised. Yes?
Just a quick question. Do you mean for the phases to be localized in space or not?
I mean that the phases start out, that system I has a viewable VI, which let me call it AI, the eigenvalue of the I system, and it has a phase in the I phi I. Then there's the process of alignment, which I'm about to try to model, in which phi I becomes locked to phi A I.
I think I was asking just a different question. I mean, you're talking about atoms, but another subsystem of the universe I could consider would be one particle over here and another particle far away. That's a valid system,
yes.
Phase, the Schrodinger equation.
It has one phase.
So that phase would pertain to the pair of particles no matter how far apart they are.
Yes.
So that phase is not a local viewable in any way.
Yes. Yes. Very good. Okay. So I asked myself, could I write down some dynamical system which would have the property that it had solutions that locked the phases to phases which are aligned with the eigenvalues of the other vehicle, and with when they were locked in would lead to the evolution of the phases that I need to get the Schrodinger dynamics. And one can write something down and show that it has solutions of that kind.
Are you saying that you start off with any distribution and that doesn't satisfy quantum theory? It's only
right.
In some equilibrium distribution that you get the Schrodinger equation and
right.
So on. Okay.
Right. And I sort of feel like I'm two-thirds happy with this proposal. I was happy enough to put it in the paper. I can't show that the solutions where the phase aligns are completely stable, and so I'm very frustrated by that. But there is a dynamics which has solutions, which has a kind of degenerate set of solutions where the phases align, and I go away a little bit in some directions and they go back, but I can prove that they align. So it's an open problem to ask whether they're aligned generally or not.
Isn't this dynamic dependent on your choice of basis?
Yes.
So that's another issue.
It's dependent on the choice of basis because these coefficients are in the dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
The omegas here are the frequencies of the quantum frequencies of the phases, and I just basically have a dynamics which drives the system to these from some starting points, drives the system to align the phases and have the quantum dynamics work.
So it goes back to this point that, you know, if you assume that, so in order to have a dynamic, you have to choose a preferred basis,
yes.
And then you have to
yes, this for sure.
why this preferred basis somehow dissolves in the...
This for sure. And again, if people, what I want to do is go through the issues and come back in detail if anybody wants to address. And Laurent keeps raising this issue, and that will be one of the things on the list.
See, was that a Hamiltonian dynamics, basically? Does Liouville's theorem apply to that?
That's something I think so. And that suggests that they're not, that not everybody goes to
yes.
that stuff. Yeah.
That's the worry.
Yeah, it is a worry.
You mean to that action?
Yeah. That action that was said.
So I start with an action, which is, I don't want to belabor this because this would be the rest of the talk, but I start with a rather complicated action made to do what I just said, and when the phase is aligned, it collapses to another action. I'm going to need this in a little bit. This is basically the action for the Schrodinger equation expressed in terms of the probability density and the phases for phi. This is not a new thing, but yeah, that other action collapses to this action when the phases.
So the R's are what you tell the theory what R is.
Yes,
right?
R's are transition rates, basically.
You that's input.
That's input, and R's are input, and they are related. They are basically the real parts of the matrix elements of the Hamiltonian.
And the deltas are input as well.
The deltas are input, yes. They are the phases in the Hamiltonian.
So I don't understand what you mean by phases being aligned and not being aligned.
Let me just say that again. The phases to start with are distributed one for, there's a degree of freedom of a phase for every subsystem in the ensemble. The subsystem also has a Biebel, which is, say, an eigenvalue of some observable at relative position. Okay. When they phase, when they come to alignment, two subsystems have the same phase if they have the same eigenvalue of the Biebel. That's what I mean by alignment. Okay. Here's the thing. If I just said that the phis were just always functions of the A's, then that would be almost like saying that the phis were part of a wave function which has an ontological status. The hope to get out of the double ontology and have something with reciprocal dynamics is that this is an equilibrium point or a stable fixed point to some other dynamics. So I'm not sweeping, I feel like I made one stab at that. I'm not sweeping the problem under the rug. Okay. Otherwise, you're just putting a bunch of words around de Broglie.
But they have the same issue, don't they? They
have a different equilibrium issue.
So that's different from this equilibrium issue?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Once the phase is aligned, you can write psi of x is square root of rho of x, where x is the A, in the I, S of x. Before that, there's no wave function before the align. So for me, a big part of this project has been, is there some dynamics that would result in that? Otherwise, I'm just faking it. I'm just taking the Broglie-Bohm or Vic, which is the Broglie-Bohm in any basis, and inventing a very implausible story to go around.
But do the phases always have to align? I mean, can't you have, you know, some phases here align and they align differently here, and can't you get domains of different phase lines?
Things like that are very interesting to contemplate. There's a lot of what if questions like that.
Right.
Okay.
All right, Nate?
Yes.
So maybe you missed something, but you say there's no wave function until they're aligned.
Yes.
So before they're aligned, how do you determine the ensemble of particles which can influence the behavior of a particle? Because it's supposed to be all those with approximately the same wave function.
That's a great question. That is a great question. So in words, I say systems which have a similar preparation, the same constituents in a similar external environment.
Yeah.
But to make that precise...
But if it's, I mean, if the only vehicles or actual properties a system has are a value for something, the Pauli theme, and also its phase, I mean, how does it know how it was prepared? And there's some kind of record of how it was prepared is kept in the actual onset state of the...
No. That's the story that I imagine telling is that there's a more fundamental theory which knows things like that, which has a very weird ontology, because things being similar are in some sense some form of locality in this more fundamental theory. And this more fundamental theory knows things like that. Because the topology of what interacts with what has to do with some notion of similarity rather than some notion of space. Okay. But I'm not going to expose my attempts to formulate that theory today. But that's what I imagine. Okay. So here's some more issues. Okay, so this has come up in different ways. Some people hint about this. Here's the subsystem issue. I think perhaps we said this. Consider a part. It's a subsystem of a proton, which is a subsystem of a nucleus, which is a subsystem of an atom, which is a subsystem of a H2O, which is a subsystem of blah, 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 blah. Okay? There are ensembles for each of those subsystems. Which one do I use? Do I use all of them? Well, it's easy to show you rich contradictions to use all of them. Okay, you have to choose one. So here's a thought. Okay, and maybe you guys, knowing much more about quantum foundations, can knock it dead. The thought is the following. So at each level of this hierarchy, there is a density matrix, and each one is the trace of the one above it with the row 3 is the trace of row 4 with these degrees of freedom traced out, etc. That's well known. Okay. Now, somewhere in there, in the hierarchy of rows, there may be a pure state. And basically, my proposal is to pick the first pure state. After that, the ones higher up in the hierarchy can also be pure states, but there's only one, which, if it is, to my understanding, which if there is, if it is, exists as the first one, which is an entangled pure state. After that, they just have to be product states. Yes, you're raising your hand. You know something about that.
No, it's a question. Would you assume that there is always such a pure state? Or that
no.
May not be?
I don't know. That's a question I have for you guys. I know you have theorems like it's always possible to add an auxiliary, what it's called, ancillary system, and purify a state. I've been to enough talks of you guys that I've heard that often enough. Okay. But whether that means that we really believe in nature there's always a pure state, I think I've also been around you guys often enough to know that there's disagreement about that. Okay. So I would assert there is always a level where there's a pure state.
So you
would? I would assert that. And maybe, but I don't know that I need to assert that, I'm just expressing an opinion.
Sure.
Okay. Anyway, so this is a sketch. I mean, this is not a fully worked out resolution of the issue, but it's a point to what might be the start of a resolution of the issue. Okay. Here's what I call the classical limit issue. I don't know if that's what I think Rob raised it. I don't know if this is what you were referring to. But this is how I understand the classical limit issue. I start over here with the dynamics that I propose, which you could call the copy dynamics. Okay. In the approximation in which all the occupation numbers are large, and a little bit, one of the other things I have to show you is that that's necessary. So I'm a bit out of order, but that is necessary. Okay. I can derive the quantum dynamics, assuming also that the phases align. When the quantum dynamics involves actions which are large compared to h-bar, so h-bar is ignorable, then I can derive the classical dynamics. So there is a procedure to derive from the copy dynamics classical dynamics. Okay. But that seems to contradict the assertion I made that the copy dynamics doesn't apply to large macroscopic systems which obey classical dynamics approximately, because there's only, because there's systems which are big enough and complex enough that the quantum state that I would use for them, picked out in the last discussion, is unique. Okay. So there seems to be a problem here, and I worried a lot about this problem, and again, here's a sketch of a way to address this problem. And the possible answer is that all that's required, so I imagine, look, I imagine I have some big macroscopic system which has made up of a lot of little atoms. And there's some center of mass coordinate, x, of the big macroscopic system. And there's also the center of mass coordinates of all the members of the atoms. And I don't have to get classical dynamics, I just have to get classical dynamics for the big, for the center of mass. I don't have to get it for all the degrees of freedom in the quantum state of the big system. Actually, it was very helpful with Laurent and our friends in relative locality. We were worrying about something called the soccer ball problem. This is a different version of the soccer ball problem. It's just necessary to derive the classical behavior for the center of mass. Well, how can I do that? I can do that if I can make a model where I use for the ensemble the atoms in the macroscopic body themselves. There may be a bigger ensemble they're part of, but if I have a big soccer ball that's made up of a lot of similar atoms, let me try to use the atoms in the soccer ball themselves for the ensemble and turn my cranks. Okay. In order to, however, and that way I can get the action to be much bigger than h-bar. How do I get the occupation numbers all big? I can get the occupation numbers if I model the system by a kind of condensed matter model where I have occupation numbers in boxes and I make the boxes big enough. So if A bar is the size of the box, I make the boxes big enough that there are many atoms inside each box. So in other words, I coarse grain. And if I make a model of the system by coarse graining so that the occupation numbers in each box are large, that is, there's many atoms in the body in each box, then I can honestly run a derivation like this and derive that the center of masses of classical systems obey classical mechanics. And let me give you a little bit more detail about that. So let me imagine, it's not necessary, but let me imagine a one-dimensional system. So my A's are 1, 2, 3, 4 lattice sites, etc. I have a lattice space in A bar. My reaction rates are nearest neighbor. So I can only jump or copy from nearest neighbors in the model. And I assume that the derivatives of the occupation numbers and the derivatives of the phases are small. That is, these are things of the order 1 over A. A bar, lattice spacing times these, are small. So the ensemble, so I now populate these states, my viewable states, are the lattice sites. I populate them in a way which has many high occupation numbers, which are slowly varying. And I can derive from that action for quantum mechanics, well, I can derive that from the copy dynamics. It has the this is the standard form, and where this is rho, this, the S dot, the derivative of S term, and the V, which is a classical potential, are all getting set up to tell me about the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. I have the quantum potential, as from de Broglie-Bohm, which is the only place that H-bar appears. And H-bar comes in by taking the original action there, which was dimensionless, and scaling it so that it has indeed dimensions of an action by H-bar, and that's where H-bar is introduced, and then I scale frequencies by H-bar to get energies.
But in the beginning, I'm confused about something, because there was, operationally, how do you define H-bar in your theory? There was no H-bar at all.
Yes, I'm introducing H-bar to make a correspondence with quantum mechanics within which H-bar is a real constant, it has a real numerical value in the system of units.
But in the real theory, the fundamental theory, there's no way to determine what H-bar is. If it's just, is there any operational memory in which you can define what it is? Within the...
I think I don't have a good answer to that question. I think that's a very, let's just put that in a box of a question that I don't have a good answer to.
But in your mind, H-bar is just to be considered something that is coming to you. You had in mind that there was underlying a fundamental theory.
Yes.
But should I think of H-bar actually as something like it's an emergent quantity that is will be function of the fundamental theory?
I think it's not in the story as I first told it. Moran is right about that. If you let me go blah, blah, blah about the more fundamental theory, it should be in that, which, as you just said. But I don't... let me accept, I think it's an interesting question. So let me just bracket it and suggest it. Okay. In any case, let's consider the action for the Schrodinger equation expressed in this form in the approximation in which I neglect H-bar compared to the other possible terms with dimensions of action. Okay? So I just cross it out. Then I get a action which has, whose dynamical variables are an S, which is a function of the viewable variables, in this case, my one-dimensional discrete position, and a probability density, which is related to occupation number of those. Okay? And if I neglect the only term that has H-bar in it, I get this term, which is just probability conservation with a current velocity given by the gradient of the phase for the action. And I get the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. So what I get when H-bar terms and H-bar can be neglected to other compared to the other terms in the dynamics with dimensions of action, you get a, and this is not new, but I need to be able to say it at this point, you get a ordinary ensemble, statistical ensemble of systems obeying the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. So in other words, what's happened here is that the viewable degree of freedom described in terms of rho of x and S of x gets classical dynamics. So now I have an approximation in which the, if you like, the hydrodynamic variables described in this ensemble obey classical dynamics, which is equivalent to saying that there's an ensemble or a gas of particles, each one of which obeys the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. And if that's the case, then the center of mass of this gas obeys also the classical equations of motion, i.e. Newtonian dynamics. So this is a model which incorporates a argument starting with what I'm calling the copy dynamics, going in a suitable approximation to the quantum dynamics, and going in a standard approximation from the quantum dynamics to classical dynamics in which there's no paradox. So I can understand why, using a model like this, the centers of masses of large bodies obey classical mechanics. So this is again a sketch of a resolution of that. It raises an issue.
So just to see if I understand. So initially, what you're saying is that you start from this, microscopical object, and you want to define its sub-constituent as being that this guy is the system.
Yes.
Right. Earlier, And then from that you do some coarse graining and you get there. But you had, before, in the previous slide, you had a definition of what you would call a system.
Yeah, so let me say it precisely.
If
you look at this system, the only vehicle these atoms have is they're at some latticite. And then they're doing copy dynamics. This one says, zoom, I want to copy this one, so I go here. And this one says, I want to copy this one, so I go there. And this one wants to copy this one, so it goes here. That's all that's going on. There's an approximation to that, which looks like a gas of particles obeying classical dynamics, flying along. That's what's happening. That's why I think there's an issue which I want to raise, but subject to the issue I'm about to raise, I think there's not a paradox between saying that the exact quantum states of macroscopic systems are unique and saying that we can understand why macroscopic systems obey classical dynamics in this framework. That is, the classical dynamics can be a consequence of the copy dynamics. Okay.
So that order A bar, those are corrections to quantum dynamics?
Oh, sure.
So.
Well, no, they're not corrections to quantum dynamics. They're correct. They're corrections to the classical, to treating this lattice gas as a continuum gas. They're near next nearest neighbor coupling, which are induced and things like
but,
that.
But because you have to do a coarse graining, right, to get the quantum dynamics.
Yeah, now let me register the issue of the coarse graining. Okay? Because what's happening here is I'm asserting that I can apply my copy dynamics not to, quote, a fundamental description, but a coarse grained description. Okay? And that raises an issue. Am I allowed to do that? To which I don't know the answer, but I just throw the question back. Already in quantum mechanics, it's a hard issue. This is the issue of the normalization group within quantum mechanics. I know is a big issue, and how I remember when we struggled with that. I mean, the issue of when can you coarse grain of a quantum system to a quantum system, there's been a lot of progress since we played around with that, but it's a hard issue, and there's a similar hard issue here, which I'm not addressing. I'm just assuming that I was allowed to coarse grain.
I think I'm just telling this around. So you only get quantum dynamics in the large n limits.
Yeah.
So that means that you should have corrections to quantum dynamics that are suppressed.
I have a lot to say about
good.
And I don't want to go forever, so let me take one more question here and then, yeah.
Okay, so I'm trying to understand you're defining this gas, whether you're actually maintaining your initial postulate, which is you have equivalent systems. Because it seems to me if you're defining an ordering of your system, so you've actually defined your neighbors.
I'm saying my vehicle is what latticite is the atom sitting on. I have an ensemble of atoms, which I say are described by a single quantum state, but they differ by which atom they're at, which latticite they're actually sitting on.
But that's actually not a vehicle of those individual systems, but it's a
vehicle of the individual system. An individual atom is sitting on some latticite.
I think the confusion, because in the beginning you told us that two hydrogen atoms in different places could be identified in valid location as being made part of the distinguishing characteristics.
Yes, so
between one system and another.
Position here, or at least relative position within some small body, as a quantum degree of freedom. Okay. And I'm using the ensemble idea in a different. I'm saying among the ensemble, the elements of an ensemble of atoms subject to some periodic potential on some lattice, okay, there are going to be all those in such a situation in the universe. But among them, there's going to be the sub-ensemble, which is actually just different atoms in the same macroscopic body. And I'm just going to reason about that and throw away the rest for the time being. Okay. Let me go on for some. Okay, so this is what I've argued here. Okay, so here's the most interesting of the issues. And I'll say this and then I'll just mention the others and stop. What happens when the occupation numbers are not large? In particular, what happens when an occupation number is zero, which would be a node you can call the node of a wave function. Well, if NA is zero, then N dot A is zero explicitly, because you can't copy, there's nothing to copy. The only way the occupation number for A increases is by copying other subsystems, and if it's zero, it's zero, and there's nothing to copy, and it just stays at zero. So the dynamics breaks down at nodes. Period. By the way, I'm told that the Dvorak-Borum dynamics also get stuck at nodes. But that's not to shift the blame. Okay? What, just to understand what went wrong in my derivation of the Schrodinger equation, again, this is the, if you look at the second derivative and you study what went wrong, you discover that at some point you multiplied and divided by the occupation number, which when it's zero means that you did something illegitimate. So you can actually understand in detail why the derivation that I gave is wrong at nodes. Okay. So this is either a feature or a bug. Okay. So responses. There's the superficial response and the interesting response. The superficial responses are, well, you can fix this, it's not too hard, within a model. You can choose a basis, a little bit rotate the basis in some direction so the no occupation numbers are zero. You can add to this big ensemble of the universe just a small number of spectator states sitting out there on the far side of the moon or the far side of a galaxy 10 megaparsecs away of a moon there, which just has one of everybody, because you only need one to make it work. Or you can insist on a state with all the NAs, on mixing in just a little bit of a superposition of a state where there are no nodes, for example, the ground state. And then it goes through. So you can fake it. But the more interesting question is, does something new appear there? That is, are there some additional terms in the dynamics that I've argued is in any case an approximation to a more fundamental dynamics. So there's some additional terms here which would let them jump around nodes and which might become testable or observable in very delicate experiments about quantum states. So this is an opportunity not... So here are just, I'm just going to list because I don't want to go on, take rob you of your time more than 5 minutes more. So there are other issues. What defines the ensemble? We've already discussed that and I've waved my hand. Does the ensemble require preferred simultaneity? Yes. Is that necessarily bad? Well, Q, you know, NIESH or CMC foliation or whatever. What picks the Biebolz? Do the Biebolz change when the system is put through a different preparation, etc.? How is the connection between linear operators and observables, which are non-diagonal, and the Biebolz established? This is a kind of technical issue, but it's an issue for Dvorak-Borum and Nelson and so forth. If you work within a basis, can you really show that you get the right expectation values of operators non-diagonal on that basis? And I don't know. And here's the fun stuff, which is that this, even if you take care of the nodes issue, this has to break down long before the ambitions to make a quantum computer. Because look, if you require that all the occupation numbers are big, then that requires that the dimension of your Hilbert space has to be greater, has to be less than, at the very much less than 10 to the 80, which is the number of roughly quantum degrees of freedom, number of atoms in the universe. And D is 2 to the number of qubits. Okay, so that tells you that number, things are going to break down when the number of qubits is less than, you know, 40 or something.
So you're saying entangle 40 qubits and you get something interesting?
Yeah, or show that this can't be right. So
haven't people already done that?
No. What people have done, or I wouldn't be giving this talk, I'm not that foolish. What people have done, of course, is people have taken things like buckyballs, okay, which are numbers of atoms on the order of 100, is that right? Something like that.
60.
That's on order of 100 in my kind of physics. And put them through double-slit experiments and measured interference with them. But all that they're doing is interfering the center of mass degree of freedom. They're not, it can be argued, not interfering the whole Hilbert space of vibrational and other degrees of freedom and excitation there. So we're not there yet, but the suggestion is that if anything roughly like this is right, it should break down long before a quantum computer is made. If it doesn't, and this is the kind of jokey punchline, then we'll know that we're not by far the first to try to make quantum computers in the universe. Okay. And I'll end on that note.
Having inspired Sam. So I guess we have time for a couple of questions, and then we can conclude the formal part of the seminar. But of course, everyone is invited to remain for more questions after that part. So I guess there are surely a couple of questions. So one is to
So if you write again down the equation relating the wave function to the density, probability density, and the phase, and you wrote it in the blackboard before.
Oh, okay. Sorry,
if I can. It's the standard one, so it relates to the square root of the density.
Sorry.
The exponential.
Now that's, this is what you want. The square root of rho of x, uvi s of x of t over h bar.
Exactly. So, what I don't understand is this. So you say that rho is actually the it tells me the proportion, in this case, the proportion of subsystems which are in position x divided by the total number of subsystems,
yes.
Right? Okay. But then you are saying, since I use the psi as a, the square of the psi as a probability, so I ask, what is the probability that I detect one particle at this position in respect of the probability of detecting the particle in this other position? What you are saying in this, saying that rho is the actual number of particles, you are saying that I actually detect. So if I say that the probability here, detection here is double than the probability here, is that here I'm detecting two particles.
Oh, good. No. So let me. Okay. Here's what I'm thinking. What I'm thinking is that this x is really a relative position. So here's an atom, here's the nucleus, here's the electron, and x is that, and here's some other nucleus. The electron, and here's another x prime, here's another nucleus, here's another electron, here's an n double prime. I'm assuming that what we've made an ensemble with is information of relative positions, the distances within the atom.
For example, just the experiment in which I send electrons or neutrons on a screen. So the x in that case represents the position on the screen.
Yes.
Not a relative distance. So you are saying that if I say that the square of psi is at a point is twice than the square of psi at another point, you are telling me that there arrive two particles at once.
No.
Or
and
no, then
I'm
one
saying
particle.
I'm saying this one is in your box. Okay? But these guys are copying each other all the time. So I'm saying the probability that in the next instance you will find a particular x equals 17 nanometers, whatever, okay, in the box is proportional to the number in the whole ensemble because the rate of copying is fast enough.
Okay, so rho means the number of subsystems that have that property, but not at the same time. They can have that property at different times.
No, but at different places in the universe.
But x is just one place. When I measure on a screen.
My claim is that when you're talking about an atom, you're modeling it as a system with a relative position, And that's what we're making, that's what this x is. This x is a relative position. It's the position of the nucleus, it's the vector from the nucleus to the electron.
Oh, I see, the whole screens around the universe.
Yes.
Of my screen.
Yes.
Is it fair to say in this localized object, the particle is jumping around in some completely crazy way?
Yes.
Under the influence of all the other particles, which are also jumping around in some completely crazy way.
Yes.
That's the...
There was another question later on.
So this... Sorry, I have an objection to the main idea, which we talked about, which is that, you know, the bigness of space is ridiculously small compared to the vastness of possibility space.
That's this comment
yeah.
here.
So but I don't think your analysis is quite doing justice to the problem. So I'm thinking, we don't need to entangle 40 qubits. I can take a product state of 40 qubits. So what do? I flip 40 coins, fair coins, and I've produced 1 out of 2 of the 40 different product states. That's 1 out of 2 of the 40 different quantum states. And then I start doing measurements. Now, your analysis suggests that only if there's other copies of that randomly chosen quantum state out there in the universe ought I to get quantum predictions. But how does the universe know how my 40 coins are going to come up? So the universe has to have copies of...
No, because
of those product states, of which there are 2 to the 4.
No, because again, this is a sketch, but I claim that I only make the quantum ensemble for entangled states. Once I'm up to making product, I am not playing this game anymore. I see. Your question did have an influence on me.
I see.
And
okay,
this was exactly aimed to. And this is a sketch, so I don't claim that I know that this resolves the question, but this is a strategy to resolve that question.
Can I pick at this then?
Please.
So strictly speaking, if you want to quantize everything, then you know the criterion for really being sure is to be informationally isolated. No other systems in the universe should have any information. And so, strictly speaking, it's extremely rare for any subsystem to have left no impact on anything else in the universe. And the way that, you know, Everettians talk about this, they say, look, if we look at the universe, the true universal wave function, then the universe isn't even an eigenstate of this solar system existing. So, you know, every ion I prepare in the lab isn't in really in a pure state because, you know, in lots of branches of the wave function, you know, there's no solar system here.
So I think I just have to disagree with that.
Oh, okay.
I think I just have to, that I have to say, I am, but what I mean by quantum mechanics is quantum mechanics as it is used by real experimenters to predict things in labs in which we assume that we can use the usefully the notion of a quantum state to explain the stability of an atom or a small molecule. And that's the range of applicability of quantum mechanics I'm talking about.
Do you have a classical quantum cut then? So I'm not allowed to quantize the magnetic field in which I'm preparing my ion?
I need to have one, this again is a sketch for where to put it. But it's not a quantum to classical cut, it's a quantum to unknown cut.
Okay, one last question on this topic. So when John asked about how you could possibly know which ensembles your theory applies to, given that you started by saying it's the ones that have the same quantum state. And you said, because you want to derive the quantum state, not assume it. Your ontology doesn't contain the quantum state. That's what you're avoiding,
mm-hmm.
you're trying to avoid to do. So you said, well, they have the same preparation, to which John's response was, but the ontic states you described didn't encode the preparation in them. And you said some deeper ontology will. But then it seems to me that your deeper ontology is thus encoding the wave function, and so you haven't actually avoided doing the thing that you wanted to avoid.
I think I can't, since I have nothing to offer, I can't, let me just take that as a big warning and a caution. I don't want to just wave my hands and dream in front of you, so let me just take that as a caution and a serious issue.
Great. Thank you. Okay, so thank you. Yeah.